Today is December 1st, 2020. We are at Amelia Island's Council on Aging to do an interview with Janice Ankrum, President and CEO. Interviewers are Patty Boxler and Dickie Anderson. Janice was born and raised in what is now the historic district of Fernandina Beach. Janice, thank you so much for being here and letting us interview you. Probably my most difficult question is to ask you to give me a short answer to what is the Council on Aging and what it has meant to you. We will then focus on memories of growing up on Amelia Island and how it has impacted your life.
The Nassau County Council on Aging is the premier provider of services to seniors in Nassau County. There are 25,000 seniors in our county, and we want to work with as many as possible. Last year, we served more than 5,000 seniors. The pandemic hit us very hard, so in 2020, we had aspirations to exceed 7,000 seniors. However, we work with seniors at all levels. We help seniors. Everything that we do is about aging in place. So what we want to do is make sure that every senior has the opportunity to age in place independently and freely. So we have our home health programs. We have aides who go into the homes and take care of them. They bathe them. They clean their homes. They provide companionship. We also have an adult day health care where we have people afflicted by dementia. We provide respite to the caregivers. So they come to us. We provide them with all type of therapeutic activities. We have the only mode of public transportation in Nassau County. We have 26 buses who take people all over Nassau County and into Jacksonville. We have meals. We have Meals on Wheels program. At the height of the pandemic earlier this summer, we were providing meals to virtually about 1,000 people. We were providing about 3,500 meals per week.
And you also have, I think you're just opening or building a new center in Hilliard?
Repairing.
Actually, we're renovating the center on the west side, the West Side Senior Center, and we received an appropriations from Tallahassee, from the governor, with the support of Senator Bean and Representative Cord Byrd.
I think that really brings me to want to say thank you, because I understand that only 4% of all the requests from the state were answered, and you were chosen to be one of the recipients because of the good reputation that you have.
We were very, very fortunate. Somehow the governor saw the need, the benefit for our seniors in our community. With Senator Bean and Cord Byrd's help, it really supported us. There was a 96% veto over the state of Florida due to the pandemic, and monies had to be funneled other places. So we were very fortunate. We were the only special project in Nassau County that was funded.
One thing, I've been a volunteer with you, as you know, and we had quite a dramatic difference in facilities. Can you describe the old building and the new building?
The old building was built in the mid-1980s. Monies were secured by then Representative George Crady, by the governor, and the building was built on the property of what is now Baptist Health. Because we did not own the land, when we moved, of course, we did not own the build. We could not sell the building, so we just had to leave it. It was a 7,500 square foot building. It was pretty antiquated. It didn't have accessibility for a lot of our people with disabilities, and it was much smaller. We had one room to do activities, and of course we had an adult daycare that was very small, and we had sometimes three staff in one office. So fast forward to 2020. In 2016, actually, we purchased the 25,000 square foot building, the building we're in now, which some people refer to as the Rainier Building, and we were able to, of course, at that time, go ahead and lease the building to Rainier for another year before they moved. So we moved here at the end of December of 2018.
Actually, having survived a hurricane.
Actually, what happened, of course, thank you. In 2017, we were hit by Hurricane Irma, nearly destroyed the building. The roof was leaking in here, water to my ankles. There was a picture of me, the news leader. I was just exasperated. So with the help of the insurance company, board members, the community, we were able to rebuild and build better. So now we have a beautiful building we're very proud of. We have, as I said, 25,000 sprawling square feet of a beautiful building that we can do many activities. We have many rooms. We had many classes we've had in this building. There were times that there was no parking here. Mm-hmm. People parked on the grass. Mm-hmm. People parked across the street. That's before the pandemic, of course, but we hope to get there again one day. But we really love our building. Right now, we don't need all of the space, so we are leasing some of the space to tenants in the building. We have about 10 tenants in our building right now. Some of them are senior-serving entities. We have community hospice here. We own the building out back, and that's Florida Psychological Associates. We also have a grief counselor here, Reverend Tippins, in the building. We have a couple of real estate companies, a couple of attorneys. So we love
Janice, being here. One thing, we'll be doing these recordings, and of course we want to go back to your memories of growing up here. But just quickly explain how you took a thriving center where people were taking tap dancing lessons and painting and beading and that kind of thing and adjusted to the pandemic.
Mid-March of this year, life changed for everyone. We had one day to figure out what we were going to do for our seniors. As I mentioned, seniors were coming into the building, the things that you were talking about a moment ago, and the next day, no one was coming. We closed the building down. At that moment, I sat with the leadership team, and we decided to launch our Boots on the Ground campaign. If the seniors can't come here, we're going to go to them. We're going to make it as easy for them as possible to adjust to their new lives. So what we did, our Boots on the Ground campaign consisted of making sure every senior had a meal, who needed a meal at no charge. We made sure that we provided telephone reassurance. We wanted to contact every senior that we had a phone number for or we could get a hold of to see how they were doing. With the help of our wonderful volunteers, we formed a group of people who called on all seniors that we had information on to see how they were doing. How often do you want us to check on you? Once a week, twice a week, every day? And whatever they wanted, we did that as well. We also wanted to make sure that the caregivers who were benefiting from the adult day health care, that they had some connections. So Deborah Domkowski, our certified dementia practitioner, contacted them. She did some drive-bys in the driveway, just checking on them, waving to them, whatever they needed that we could provide them with. So we wanted to make sure that every service that we could provide to them remotely, that we were able to do that.
We could spend our entire hour with you talking about this. Again, I joined Patty. We are so appreciative that we live in a community that provides so much, and a lot of it's been your initiatives and your energy and your ability to attract people that can do this. So we're going to go back in time, Janice, to talk a little bit about your family background, your parents, siblings. How did your family come to Amelia Island?
As far as I can go back, in my memory or what I've been told, my great-great-great-grandparents migrated here. My mother was born and raised, my maternal great-great-great-grandparents. And we were related to the Treyes and the McDonald's in Old Town. They were Neil Frank and some of the others. And that was a large part of my family. I don't know a whole lot about some of them, but I'm still in the process of researching a lot of our history.
Good.
My grandmother, Mary Agnes, was a cook on Cumberland Island when I was a little girl. She and her brother, John Roberts, worked as a team. during the summers, a couple of summers, my first summer, I was going to the fourth grade, about 9 or 10. They took me over with them. I had the opportunity and the pleasure of playing with the kids while they cooked and cleaned what is now Grayfield Inn. I played with the Carnegie kids, the Fergusons, every day. We would explore the island. We would just have a lot of fun. We became very close. First time I saw deer, of course, my first snake. And I remember vividly how during lunchtime, because we played all day outside, I remember lunchtime, my grandmother, because we lived in the Maze Quarters. My grandmother.
Over on Cumberland Island.
On Cumberland Island, Grayfield, and there were the Maids' Quarters, which consisted
was it,
of.
Was it operating as an inn at that time?
No, it was private residence.
It was a private residence, but they always had guests. The family had a lot of guests over from time to time. So what my grandmother would do, she would call us up for lunch, and she would give us our lunch outside. We eat our lunch outside.
Would that be all the children?
That was all the children. But at dinner time, the kids had to dress up. They had to leave. We had to separate. Only at that time did I realize I was really different, because they went to dress up for dinner, in the huge dining room. And I would go off to the maid's quarters, which was right off of the dining area, with the large kitchen and the rooming amenities up behind that.
So maid's quarter were part of the actual Grayfield Inn?
Yes.
Not
yes,
separate building.
Correct. Same building. So we loved each other. So what we would do at dinner, I would be looking over the counter. I could barely, I was looking over the counter watching them have dinner with their families, and we'd be waving at each other. And we knew that we could not wait to get together the next day. So that's how we lived. That's how it was, because I would spend 6 weeks at a time. Every two summers I went for 6 weeks, but we had a lot of fun. Those are my memories with Cumberland Island.
Oh, that's very special. Let me get back
a
little bit
see
to
any of them. Do you see any of those folks now?
Coleman Langshaw.
Let's get back a little bit to your family. So your family goes back many generations and lived in Old Town, probably before there was a new town.
Of course, before there was a new town. I remember growing up, my uncle, he did pogie fishing. A lot of black people at the time made their living, as you may know, fishing. They didn't have much education. Either you were working in someone's home as a domestic servant, or usually the men, they worked on fish boats as deckhands, so much. We ate a lot of seafood because it was free. My grandfather would bring seafood home because sometimes that was a part of his pay. I'm sure he didn't get paid as well, so they gave him a lot of seafood. So we ate a lot of fish when I was coming up. But they were very happy times because you didn't know what you didn't know.
Exactly.
And you just everybody stuck
were
together.
Were there siblings or cousins or
oh my goodness, my
other children?
Grandmother Mary Agnes Roberts Johnson had 14 kids.
Wow.
So there were a lot of siblings, a lot of aunts and uncles for me. And my mother had 8 kids, okay? So we had a huge family, and my mother's sister, she had 9 kids, and there were so many of us kids.
Where were you in the pecking order in your family?
In the pecking order, I'm the second eldest.
All right.
Second eldest.
My brother, however, my older brother, thank you. However, he moved away when he was 16. He went to stay with my uncle in Atlanta, because my dad came here when he was 16 or 17 years old from Somerville, South Carolina. My dad wanted to get away from working on a plantation.
Okay.
Because he was working on a plantation. He mentioned a guy's name, because even when he and I were traveling to South Carolina 3-4 years ago, he would say, "See those trees over there? I planted those on Mr. So-and-so's plantation." Driving through South Carolina with him brought me, I just, it just came alive because he remembered. He said, I helped build that house there. I planted those trees. And my dad no longer wanted to pick cotton and pick vegetables and go to the market and sell these things for anyone. So that's why he came to Fernandina to have a better life. My Uncle Johnny, his older brother, was already here, and Landon Williams, who owned the Palace Saloon and a couple of other places in Fernandina, the Aloha that was on the beach, the Aloha Lounge. He came to work with my dad, yeah. Came to work with him.
Let's go back, because I think this is interesting historically. So there was the Palace Saloon, which has always been the Palace Saloon, and there was also a bar restaurant on the beach.
It was called the Aloha Lounge, the Aloha. It was still owned by Landon Williams, okay? And I was so young, but all I remember is that it was like a bar-type place that people went to, but it was on the beach. It was where those condominiums are now, the apartments on the beachfront side. It used to be Moore's Grocery. Mm-hmm. Moore's Grocery was there at one time. It was somewhere in that area. I'm not
quite
sure.
So there was a little, like a village, there was a little community on the beach at that point?
There was a community of businesses, yes. There was a community of businesses.
And was that segregated as well during that time?
Yes, I'm sure. I mean, I was so young.
You weren't hanging out at the beach.
No,
the
I was. Well, actually, it was segregated. Thank you for saying that, Patricia, because I remember vividly that was called the White Beach. And people, believe me, to this day, some people still say that because, you know, if you're 50, 60, 70, that's what you remember. That was the White Beach, and American Beach was the Black Beach. And that's how life was. However, my dad worked for Landon Williams, so he would stock the shelves with the liquor. And I also remember as a child, because we moved from the north side because we lived in the area called the Bottom.
May I ask who Landon Williams is, please? Before you go into the Bottom.
Well, they were the owners of the Palace Saloon and
the
Aloha Lounge.
Thank you.
And I heard there was some type of place right next to the Palace Saloon they were talking about the other day with Mrs. Elsie.
Yeah.
I don't know much about it, but I hear.
Yeah, that's right. We talked about the alley. And
right.
They call it
Cat Cracker.
Yeah. The Williams family, I think that.
Aubrey Williams.
Yeah, Aubrey Williams.
It was
Williams.
His father that my dad worked for.
So the Williams family was quite
a
family in the community, and still are. So
I think Hugh Williams. So anyway, I remember on Sundays, because it was illegal to sell liquor in Nassau County, Fernandina. So my dad would bootleg liquor because for his employer. I just remember we were on Division Street. We had a utility room, and it would be kept in there. It was locked. And I remember people would drive up in their nice cars, these white people, and these nice cars, and dressed really well. And they would ask for my dad, and he would go in the utility room, and they would come back. And it took us a while to realize what was going on. But, yes, he sold liquor on Sundays to people who wanted to have their drinks on Sundays. And we kept it in the storage room and the utility room. I remember that vividly.
Tell us a little bit about, you and I had a chance to talk about this with some other people that lived in an area that's now in the historic district. And if you go down 6th Street where the elegant, proper Victorian houses are, there is a little dip in the road and some beautiful trees, and it's forested. And there are houses that are more than 100 years old. And it was called the Bottom or the Bottoms?
Bottom.
The
it
bottom.
Was called the Bottom because of the dip, because it dipped down.
Talk a little bit about your memories there. Your family, I know, wasn't actually in the Bottoms, but very close by.
Well, we were very close by. We were around the corner. I mean, it's right around the corner. That's 6th Street, and we were, like, right on Broome around the corner, where it dipped on Broome Street. So I grew up playing a lot in the Bottom because of my friends and people I knew and our neighbors. And I remember we talked about Mrs. Corona, who lived on the corner, and how she was not the easiest person to get along with. And so I remember going there with my grandmother, and they would be on the porch talking, and I was so afraid of Miss Corona, I would go hide up under the house because it was on stilts. And I remember that. I remember the butlers. There were probably about 8 or 10 of them lived in a really small house. Our backyards, they lived in the bottom, and our backyards connected. And there was a large outdoor toilet out there. And I was so afraid I almost fell in one day. Because back then we weren't allowed to just run in and out of the house. You had to use that outdoor toilet until, I guess, my family realized I was going to fall in it unless they let, you know, I was able to go into the house. So, but we just had a lot of fun, and just remember there was a lot of respect and admiration for your elders back then. We raked people's yards. We always found things to do, and everyone in that area just about, because in the bottom, Black Broome Street on sixth and Broome is separated to Black and the white practically, because in the bottom was where the Black people lived, and on the right were the doctors, going up 6th Street towards downtown, the doctors, the lawyers, the school teachers. But somehow everyone got along. We got along. And as much as it pains me to say this, because we knew our place. At that time, you just know your place. You know, you didn't question what there wasn't an answer to at that time. Like they say, when you know better, you do better. But that's the way it was. I remember on one of the houses on, I can't remember exactly the house, but I will go to the back doors with my relatives, not knowing it was because I was not allowed at the front door. So to take the laundry or whatever they were doing for them, we would go to the back doors. I did that quite a few times. I remember standing outside at Walsh Drugs to get to go food because you could not go inside. And for a long time, when they covered up that area, that window, it was a discolored brick. And it always reminded me when I would ride by there of those times. And someone got smart, because then they replaced the whole wall. So that was good.
Did you go to school?
Well, kindergarten for me, because schools were segregated, I went to school at Miss Carrie Coakley's back porch. That was in the, I would say, probably the 200 block of Division Street. South Division Street, on her back porch, and Mrs. Carrie Coakley, she had one arm, but she used her other arm very well. She had a switch in one, usually, and we get, you know, if we fell asleep or we did anything, you know, bad, she would, but anyway, we went to kindergarten on Mrs. Carrie Coakley's back porch. At the time, we were living on North Broome Street, and I would walk to school with one of my classmates. He lived a couple of doors down. From there, I went to Southside because it was still segregated. And I went there first, second, and third grade. When I got into the fourth grade, schools were integrated. I went to the fourth grade at Emma Love. And from there,
what was that experience like? What are your memories? You were in fourth grade?
Well, I was afraid. I did not know what to expect. But one thing I've done growing up, I've always followed the rules. So I felt that if I didn't, I wouldn't be noticed if I didn't say much. I was a very quiet student coming up because, you know, you don't say much and you won't be noticed or you won't cause trouble. You know, you mind your manners. And I remember there were some fights that had broken out, and I remember some couple of Black kids who I didn't think were treated fairly, and the Black teachers were in an uproar.
Janice, do you remember what the ratio was of student body?
I don't. Okay. I don't remember. But you knew a lot of the kids who went, they remained your classmates through high school, the majority of them. But from that point on, I went to all the schools in Fernandina. And my senior year, which is now the middle school, that was a high school then. I was on the National Honor Society and a couple of other things in high school, and I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship from Rainier back then. Rainier really tried to integrate and really tried to look at helping black people as well as, you know, everybody else. So they always gave a scholarship to a black person and a white person. They really wanted to just have some diversity. And I thought that was really good. So I was the black person that year, but it was earned. I mean, I had really good grades. So I was able to get into the University of Florida. And I was able to get into the University of Florida. That was in 1978. And I graduated in 1982. And I really, really, really had unfinished business here because I had a large family, and I knew while other students were trying to figure out where in the country I want to live and, you know, what do I want to be doing out there in the world, I knew I had to come back and help take care of my family.
Well, I've been told to ask, what was your first job out of college?
Well, I think I know why you asked that, but it was before college. It was when I was 16 years old, okay? My first job, my first summer job, was working for the Nassau County Council on Aging. I was 16 years old. Council on Aging's office was where the Youth Sanctuary building is now, the First Presbyterian, which was a part of Walsh Drugs, you know, all that. Actually, it was some doctor's offices. But anyway, on that side street going towards First Presbyterian, there are two doors. There are two doors to that building. You go down that street. One of those buildings was the Council on Aging. That whole office was about not even half. A third of this room was the whole office, the Council on Aging, about a third of this room. I think there were just two offices in there, and that was the Council on Aging. So I was told back then they had a program, summer program the government did for low-income kids. You could apply and they would put you in a nonprofit or government agency. So I was selected to work. I was selected and I was told to report to the Council on Aging that Monday morning. And I knew if you worked in an office, girls usually typed and filed. I was so excited to type and file and get on the phone and all that stuff. At 16 years old, that's what you want to do. So I reported to work in my best dress, and I got some beads from Dixieland, which was around the corner, you know, and I was really cute. And I went to work that day, and I ended up pulling up weeds on Fletcher in the senior's yard. So it turned out that I spent my whole summer working for the Council on Aging, cleaning up for seniors, cleaning yards, cleaning cupboards, scrubbing floors, whatever they needed me to do. Back then, the Council on Aging only had one program. It was called How Can We Help? They even answered the phone, How Can We Help? And so all it was, a senior would call, and they would tell you what they needed help with. And it could be, I needed a ride to the grocery store. They had two station wagons. They had one on the east side and one on the west side, and there would be people who worked for the Council on Aging who would drive you to the grocery or to the doctor. That was the first transportation for Nassau County, and it's evolved into what we have now, like 26 buses, right? So, and even the lady who drove the station wagon, she would come and pick me up from work from my home in the morning and take me to my job assignment. So I met a lot of seniors, but it gave me a love for seniors, to do things for people and just to wanted to volunteer and just to help my community. So I really feel that's where I got it inside of me to be of service to others because it was so rewarding. Once I got over myself because I really wanted to just answer the phone, but you never knew where you were going to end up. Now, there were some jobs that lasted 2 or 3 days. You know, different people had different things. And I even remember now I passed by some of the homes still or where the homes used to be. And I had some people I really was fond of, like Mrs. Liz, Mrs. Pensy. Those were people I was really fond of. There were others, too. But that was an experience.
That is a very special special story. I'm glad Patty sleuth around and ask that question. I'd like to take you back to your memories of Center Street and what the harbor was like when you were growing up.
The harbor?
The harbor.
Well.
Harbor.
Harbor.
Okay.
Back then, we called it the docks. Okay. And I remember walking on the docks. Of course, you didn't have the area down by Charlie's like it is. I mean, it's really nice now compared to what it was. But you had the docks, and it was real rickety. There were boards that were just missing. And I mean, you really had to walk kind of tiptoe on the docks. And I remember we would go on the docks to meet Mr. Ricky Ferguson, who would put us on the speedboat and take us over to Cumberland. And I was telling the group the other day that it got me into really wanting to learn and wanting to know and understand words, and because there was a couple who, I guess they were staying at the Greyfield Inn, and or the residence at the time, and they were on the speedboat, and we were going back over to the island. And they asked me, this couple asked me my name, and how old are you, and all of that, and what grade are you going to? And I told them, and they said, are you anxious? I did not know what the word meant. And I was so ashamed. So I looked at them and said, that's a good word, so I should say yes. So anyway, but that really got me into wanting to learn and study and be more astute. It really helped me to want to do better because I did not know what that word meant, and I felt ashamed of myself for not knowing that. So our families, you would go on the docks if you wanted to get, because when the boats came in, they gave away, crab.
So it was very much a working harbor.
It was a working harbor. You know, you had the shrimp boats down there, and there were always boats coming in and out, and it was a working harbor. And anyone could get a job. Of course, I was too young, but I'm just saying you could always be a deckhand. You could always help unload boats, and there was plenty of fish, plenty of shrimp, plenty of everything.
When was the visitor center? You were telling me a story about the visitor center.
Okay. Back then, I was mentioning that after church, we would go by Jean's, which was a sundry store. They had the best ice cream and sodas. And we would spend our 11 cents, 10 cents plus a dime, I'm sorry, 10 cents plus a penny tax. And you would get either a Coke or either an ice cream cone. And then you will walk down to the docks, we called it, which is a marina now, or the harbor. And right where Brett's is, there was a place called the Welcome Center. Mm-hmm. We called it the Welcome Station. So basically, it was a place for tourists. And what they had, they gave free orange juice, because, of course, we're known for orange juice in Florida. They gave you free orange juice, so we could not wait to go on Sundays to the Welcome Center after we left Jeans to get our free orange juice. And that was just a treat for us. And then we would get our orange juice, and we'd walk home. We'd take our time looking at all the store windows and just walk. And nobody bothered us. We just had a good time. And it would take us sometimes 2 or 3 hours to get home. But our parents knew where we were, and they were fine.
Now, when you say us, are we talking about your siblings and yourself?
Siblings
or
and cousins.
And cousins.
Because we grew up Catholic. Huh. And it's probably because we were just within a block of the church growing up. So, we're Catholic family, and I was also mentioning how my earliest memories of St. Michael's is when I had to sit in the back. I did not know why, but back then, black people were restrained to the back. You had to sit in the back on the left, and that was where your spot was. And as I mentioned, when you get older, you know better, you do better. So when I got older and I realized that was why, it took a while because I, you're still a little hesitant when I got older, probably 17, 18 maybe, or when I went to college. Then I walked all the way up to the front. So my last memories in St. Michael's, I would sit first or second pew all the time. But I didn't want to stop there. I wanted to do something another black person had not done in St. Michael's because, my mother and my grandmother and my relatives, they worked in the church. They kept it clean. They washed the linens. They worked in St. Peter Claver, which was a black Catholic school and a black church, and a cafeteria. They did all of that. And I really wanted to do something something that my family would be proud of, because my family never had an opportunity to do anything else of service but to be domestic things. So I became a lector in St. Michael's. And not only that, I became the head lector after about 3 or 4 years, which meant I trained other lectors and I created the schedules for the reading. So for 12 years, I was a lector at St. Michael's. And I also was on the parish council, the youth council. I was very, very, very involved in St. Michael's at one point. I was very close to several of the priests, and Father Waters counted on me to even do funerals with him of people I didn't know, because you always have to have a lector at the funerals and different things. So I would help him a lot with those types of things. And but those are my memories, and I just wanted to be connected. And the reason I stayed at St. Michael's is because it kept me connected to my ancestors. It kept me.
It's interesting, your connection to the Catholic Church, because I think we assume sometimes that Catholics would be the white church, and it would be a Baptist or another thing. I think that's fascinating. We have a center street now that is restaurants and gift shops. Now, my research tells me there was a hardware store and a whole variety of businesses where you went to the dentist or you went to the doctor.
I have to tell you, I'll be hard-pressed to remember a restaurant on Center Street other than the ice cream station. But there were hardware store, there was shoe hospital, I remember that, dry cleaners, right across from the Palace Saloon, there was a dry cleaners, because the writing, I don't know if the writing is still on the wall, but you know, had.
I think
that's where the dry cleaners was.
Yeah.
There were A.S. Allen, which was like a clothing store. A.S. Allen, there was Pardon's Shoe Store. If you got shoes from Pardon's, you really did well, because they have really nice shoes, Mr. and Mrs. Pardon. Of course, you know about the Palace. And you had KFC. Well, it wasn't KFC. It was Kentucky Fried Chicken downtown. That they did have that downtown. That was right near where the marina is. I think it was a smaller area next to a marina. They had where the antique store is, close, right across from the Methodist Church. That was Pantry Pride. And it was also called Setzer's. I think one brought out the other at some point. I think Pantry Pride brought out Setzer's. That was a grocery store. That's why you see those big windows, because I remember you could always look in the store. Around the corner where Fred's was is something else now. That was Winn-Dixie. It could have been something before Winn-Dixie, but I remember as a child being Winn-Dixie on the corner where that Pineland Bank is, with a Keystone Hotel that you may have heard about. I was told that my grandfather worked there as a porter or something. I think took the luggage up.
Do you have memories of the Keystone Hotel?
I remember the building, but I don't remember going in, but I remember the building being there. I don't know much. I'm sure my older relatives, but I know I don't have any memories of the Keystone Hotel. But I do have memories of next to Jean's, when you go up the stairs, that building, there were the doctor's offices. And I remember also vividly the black side on one side and the white side on the other side. Because, you know, you in the waiting area, because there was really no room inside of the offices, but in the hall area, it was a wide hall, and you had different sections that you could sit in. And again, it was just accepted because that was the way it is. That was the way it was, and you didn't know what you didn't know. But all that being said, I think I feel I have been afforded really good opportunities in Nassau County and in Fernandina. And my parents told me just to believe in yourself and just do the best that you could, because I did not want to do what my mom had done. My mom, I remember even coming home from college, she was still a maid, and it really bothered me. And at some point, I guess she felt that's what she was destined to do.
So were you the first to go to college in your family?
Well, on my mother's side, I try not to keep up with it because I'm like, maybe I'm missing someone. But on my mother's side, as far as the first, second family tier, my siblings and then my cousins, no, because some did go to college who were older than me, but I'm the first to graduate that I can remember from college.
What was your major?
My major was economics, okay. But I've forgotten all of that now.
Yeah, that's good.
Major was economics, and, you know, a small town girl going to a huge college like that was very intimidating.
I think, Janice, you and I have talked about, I think people have a lot of interest in the history of the Shrimp Festival, and when I get a chance to talk to people that remember, it was not a festival, it was a boat race and a great time to get together. Can you tell us a little bit about your memories of the shrimp boat race?
I remember that was the one thing you wanted to do on a Sunday, because incidentally, the Catholic priest was the ones who blessed the fleet. So the priest would bless the fleet, and then you would...
excuse me, just a second. How many boats, shrimp boats, were there? I mean, the pictures from that you see at the museum, it's just amazing the number of boats that they had.
I wish I knew that answer, but I was so young.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I would say I know... I saw at least 10 of them. So, and we, all you wanted to do was go downtown to see the shrimp boat races. That's all you wanted to do. And when that time came, you went down there and you watched, and it was unbelievable. And they were actually racing because they move at a snail's pace as it is, but I could not believe how they were doing. And they took pride in that. And that was a big, big deal. And then years later, someone had the idea to just, you know, have some food, and then from that point you had the arts and the crafts, and it was just it's one of the biggest things that we have here in Northeast Florida. But yes, I remember the shrimp boat races, and it was something that we looked forward to every year, and I've never gotten that out of my head, how much fun we had at the shrimp boat races.
Yeah.
Because now I think they even have fireworks, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And you can hardly move.
And then you can hardly move, yeah. So that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
Were there things that happened that were dramatic as you grew up and came back from college and stayed, or?
I never moved away. And actually, I came home often. So, you know, Gainesville not being that far.
Yes.
You know, I'd get on the Greyhound bus. And you would come back home, and my dad would pick me up from the bus station, or someone would, and I would come.
Where was the bus station?
Well, actually, there was no, I don't remember. I was a little girl when Greyhound came through Yulee.
Okay.
It was Greyhound or Trailways, came through Yulee, and they stopped at 17. It used to be a package store there now, but it's now a gas station. When you're turning left going towards Jacksonville on 17,
uh-huh.
Right there on your right, right there was that gas station. That's where the bus used to stop.
Okay.
And then someone would come get you from
right, but
town.
I didn't go there. But when I grew up, they was already gone. But I remember as a child, that was there. Because I remember a lady who used to go on the Greyhound bus all the time. But my dad would come and get me, or a family member to come and get me from Jacksonville downtown on Forsyth.
The trains weren't running?
No.
When you were growing up, wasn't any kind of train service from Jacksonville.
No.
Okay.
Not to my knowledge. Not to my recollection. So you were asking me when I came back. So I never felt like I moved because I was always coming home because my mother was sickly. Mm-hmm. My mother was sickly actually from the time I could remember, probably from the time I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
And she was sickly, and so I took care of her, and of course had to take care of my younger siblings. I remember she brought my brother home from the hospital when I was 12, and I had to take care of him. I mean, and then she died at 47.
Wow.
Because she was, you know, she was ill. I mean, she worked, she only worked in domestic work maybe 2 or 3 days a week when she could, and I remember she made $60 a week. But so I came home from college. Like I said, other kids were trying to figure out where they were going to go in the world, and I knew I had to come back here. So I took care of my mom, helped her take care of my siblings, and I just tried to be of service to my community. I wanted to stay here because I needed to stay close to family.
What was your career path?
Okay, this is funny. I have to tell you that I don't believe in burning bridges, because that's why I try to treat people well, no matter who they are, because you never know. What happened was, because I hung in there at the Council on Aging and did that job, it was tough at times, but I did that job an entire summer. The lady who drove me around, who's my supervisor, Mickey Stoner, the day after I graduated from college in December of 82. So, of course, you thought the world wanted you because you were a college graduate, right? So on my second day of searching for a job, the first day I went to Kings Bay, nothing happened. The second day looking for a job, I went to the Job Service of Florida, which was on A Street. It was called the Unemployment Service. It was on A Street. So I went there, and I heard that Mickey Stoner worked there at the time, the lady who used to be my supervisor, council and agent. So I asked for Mickey, and she came out to see me, and I told her I was looking for a job, and I wanted to fill out an application. Maybe they could send me on a job somewhere. She goes, "No, we want to hire you here." So I started there, and that was because, like I said, of my working with her and had done a good job. So she said, "Come to work tomorrow." So I started on my third day of job search at the Job Service of Florida. Well, the Unemployment Service, it changed its name several times, working as an employment interviewer, which means when people came looking for jobs, they taught me how to interview them. At the time, I was making minimum wage because they had me on a temporary program. But at that time, you had to take a government test to pass. You have to pass the test, and then after that, you'll get a raise. So within 90 days, I took the test, and I passed it, and I was able to, I think, make $5 or something an hour. But anyway, so that was my career. I worked for the government. I worked in various, I did that job, then moved up to about 3 years later to a supervisory job, then just kept moving up in that position. And I ended up 14 years later, leaving the state to work in nonprofit, because I worked in various positions with the state, but I was still around here because they came up with all these programs and training programs to help people go to college and summer camp programs to help kids get summer jobs. I did a lot of that. I worked with a lot of employers in Nassau County, helping them hire people. And even where Brett's is now, when Brett's, when they built that building, they received tax credits. So I was the person in Nassau County that Brett was sent to see Janice Ankrum to do the paperwork so they can get tax credits from the state. So I just did a lot of things to help employees with the city, getting them employees, and we were paid half the salary for 6 months. It's so many things that we did all over Nassau County. So after 13 and a half years, I left there and I went to work for a nonprofit in Jacksonville.
Okay.
And that's when I started working with the homeless. And I worked for the YWCA, and it was Young Women's Christian Association. And what you did, you worked with women, and they had their own building, where back then they turned it into a shelter for homeless women and children. And the women lived their dormitory style with their kids, and they're women who may have gotten divorced, women who couldn't pay their rent, their mortgage. We had a lady who graduated from Harvard who was living there. And it was people just like myself, I realized. So smart people who just were down on their luck, domestic violence victims. So what we did, we had a beautiful building, 3 stories, actually 4 stories because you had a basement. But we realized you had to have a one-stop shop. Since they had children, a lot of them, you had to have a daycare. You had to have an after-school program. You have to have case managers to get them enrolled in school and get them on their way. You have to have a mental health counselor. So we made sure they had all the wraparound services they needed to be successful, and they were able to live there for up to 2 years while they transitioned back into the world. And after, and so we also did, we worked with apartment managers to help families who live there. Low-income apartment complexes in Jacksonville, we help kids to succeed in school.
How long did you work for YWCA?
Well, they changed their name a couple of years after I got there because we wanted to separate from the YWCA, so we became Community Connections, and I worked there for 15 years.
Wow.
And when I left there in 2012, because the CEO retired, and the new CEO did not want to retain me after about 3-4 months. She wanted to go in a different direction. I wanted to come back. Well, I was commuting every day. I never left here. I was commuting every day to Jacksonville. So I, you know, kind of said, okay, let me catch my breath. Let me see what I want to do next. And then my neighbor knew I was looking for a job. So my neighbor said, I know of a nonprofit here in Fernandina. They're looking for an executive director. And this is what I said to her. I said, okay, that's fine, but any place except the Council on Aging. And she knew why, because if you recall, back then in the newspaper, we were, you know, the board wasn't getting along. We owed the county a lot of money for the fuel because we were buying fuel from the county. We hadn't paid our meals bill. We were getting meals from a distributor. I mean, it was not a good place. I mean, we were not in a good place. And so I told her, I said, okay, any place except the Council on Aging. But she was smart. She knew it was Council on Aging, but she wouldn't tell me. She goes, well, just give me your resume, and I'll pass it on, and I really can't tell you where it is. But I said, okay, this would give me practice. So I said, okay. So when I got a call from the Council on Aging, I said, oh, okay. So I said, I didn't want to disappoint. I said, okay, I'll interview. I'll interview. And we interviewed at, it was CBC Bank, because a board member had worked there. So four board members, actually the executive committee interviewed me. But once they talked about the job, it brought back memories of what I'd done. I said, this is what I've done. I can do this. If it's this easy, I can do this. It's not that hard. So, so I didn't realize it was that desperate because I got a call the same day and received a job offer, but I didn't check my messages until that Monday. So that was a Friday. So anyway, long story short, 8 years later, I made my 8th year last month. Well, actually this month. the 19th of November was 8 years. And I was, because so many people are like, why are you working there? I said, because I believe in what they're doing. Yep. I know how to work with people. I know how to be a public servant. And somehow God was with me, and the community was with me, and somehow we did it. And you know, we still have work to do, but we did it.
Well, it was a lucky day for us, you and the community. I was part of. I watched in horror as some of the things that went on. It was a struggle to build a facility and space and personalities. So. It was a lucky, lucky day. We've had you almost an hour. I'm going to ask you one question. Is you have a unique lifetime experience with Fernandina Beach and Amelia Island. What are your reflections on growing up here and what Amelia Island is like today?
That's a good one. Do you recognize it?
I recognize certain sections of it, and as far as I'm concerned, it will never lose its appeal to me because no one can take away my memories, my successes, my lessons, and I don't look at things that have happened as failures or disappointments. They were lessons and they were trials, and you just work with them and you just keep going, and my grandmother said, just keep one foot in front of the other. I'm glad we've come a distance. There were places I could not go in that I can be in now, neighborhoods I couldn't live in I can live in now, and things I couldn't do. Being the first Black executive director or CEO of a nonprofit of this size was, you know, I don't look at it as like a big deal. It's the right thing to do. I mean, and I or I've earned it. I wasn't given this opportunity. I've earned it. Because you know what? The board was board has been very good to me. This board, even the board before, was very good to me. They hired me based on my skills, and that's all. And I'm thankful for that. It has grown. But I still love the community. I love the people. And you can tell the people who have been here and the people who are transplants for the most part. But I have to tell you, I don't have negative vibes about Fernandina, because I've had good experiences. I've had lessons, but I've had good experiences for the most part. I just wish that a lot of people, more people would look at it that way, that, you know, this is a place that I can make a difference and I can do things and, you know, and I'm worthy and I can help and I can volunteer. I just think it's a great place. Now, do I want to live somewhere else for a little while because I've never lived anywhere else? Yes. Every now and then I want to be somewhere else because I want to see something else.
That's a vacation.
I know, but I love the community. And I don't know if I told you, but I ran for school board 25 years ago. And I only lost by 7 votes.
Wow.
And it was tough because there was a recount, of course. But there was a Republican landslide that year as a Democrat. But anyway, I lost the Democratic nomination by 7 votes. But it was so funny because a guy who beat me 3 years later, he came to me and said, if you ever want to run again, I'll be your campaign manager. So I just didn't want to do it. But I have a lot of respect for politicians because it's a lot. It's a lot to run for office. It really is.
It is. Well, we want to thank you for your time. This has been a wonderful interview. Patty and I have learned a lot, and I know it will be valuable in the museum's archives.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Janice.
Thank you.